The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
I love you.
I do love you too.
John's like, why do you guys not say that immediately right back to me?
I had to click back onto your images so I could look into your eyes. I was surfing the internet.
You're like, I was pretty much surfing the internet throughout this entire podcast.
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey Bills fans, welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast, and the only podcast that won't pay $660 to win a Twitter fan poll from a second-rate TV network's Twitter account. I'm your host, Nate, and we have a great show for you guys. Free agency is over for the most part, and it's time to focus on the NFL draft coming up on Thursday, April 25th. In this episode, we will go over some mock drafts and give our list of positions that we don't want the Bills to draft with the 9th overall draft pick this year, and a few other fun topics. Tonight, I'm joined by my co-hosts, John and Mike. Fellas, it's always great to talk Bills with you. How's it going?
Go Bills. Going good.
It's going great. How are you, Nate?
So I just wanted to thank everyone. By the way, real quick, did you guys know that you could purchase Twitter poll votes like for anything? Did you know that you had the ability to do that, pay money to do that?
You can pay money. You can do anything with money, Nate. Anything.
Give me an example. What else? Could we get 1 million downloads for this podcast for $660?
Have you ever seen a video of a click farm in China?
No.
Oh.
Is that what it's? Is
don't
that...
look it up. What to tell you?
Is it basically
you can
like...
purchase? You can purchase likes, upvotes, oh, really? Hearts, oh. Whatever you want, downloads, whatever. They have whole like a giant warehouses of people just on computers, or they have complete walls of cell phones set up and audit like will automatically navigate to your thing and upvote. Right, it's like a robotic arm that
wow
swipes down through the rows of cell phones.
Mm-hmm. Jeez,
upvoting.
Wow. So we're gonna actually talk about that a little bit later. That was a really fun thing that happened this week. It's kind of off topic, but it happened. It was big in the Bills Twitter news hemisphere. So we're gonna talk about that. But really quick, I just wanted to thank people for the kind words over Twitter about my wife's and I baby girl being born. Just a quick story. I know I told John this, Mike. I haven't told you this story yet, but long story short, basically we were having contractions at the home. It was like within 5 or 6 minutes of each other. That's exactly when you're supposed to go to the hospital. It's like this little rule of thumb. So what happened is we ended up, you know, getting ready to go to the hospital, and it went from like 5 minutes to like 2 minutes. It jumped. We're like, oh, that's kind of quick. Like that usually doesn't go that. Usually it goes like, oh, 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes. You know, 4 minutes and 15 seconds. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, we get out on the road, we're driving to the hospital, and my wife's going into severe labor. We are in the hospital. We park the car right in front of the main entrance. We find a guy running that happened to be walking past with an empty wheelchair. Say, hey, can we grab that, buddy? He's like, yep, you can have it. So we went right up to the second floor. We checked in, and within 10 minutes of from the time that we got to the hospital to the time that, you know, the baby was delivered in 10 minutes is what I'm trying to say. It was insane from the time we got to the hospital to the time we got there. So pretty crazy. My wife literally gave birth standing up because we didn't have enough time to get her into the hospital bed. So it was crazy. They like literally like, you know, got on her. They, you know, they didn't catch the baby didn't just fall out, but they were there for the baby. And, you know, my wife just picked her right up. It was pretty crazy. 10 minutes from the time we got there. So luckily we didn't hit any rush hour traffic or anything, but everyone's healthy and happy and home. So thanks to all the people on Twitter that said all the nice words and kind thoughts. So appreciate it. Bills fans are the best, man. So news and notes portion of the podcast.
I noticed you said we were having contractions. I'm totally getting on board with, oh, we're having a baby, we're pregnant. Would she agree that we were having contractions? That seems like a little bit of a stretch.
I think, yeah, that might be a little bit of a stretch. I shouldn't have said that looking back at it. I was definitely not feeling any contractions. I was fine. A real quick story on that, though. Can I just say that, like, no matter what I went through that day, obviously was nothing close to that, but I had, like, the worst flu, stomach flu virus, like food sickness or whatever the night before when she started going into contractions. So it was like, imagine, like, thinking that you're going to pass out and throw up at the same time on the bathroom floor. And then your wife's like, oh, hey, by the way, like, we could have this baby soon. And just like, no way, you know, It's just insane. Luckily I was able to go there. I was able to man up and find a way to make it there. But if she was going to have that baby, then I was going to stay home. It sounds weird. Be like, how was your child's birth? Like, I don't know. I wasn't there for it. I was at home. She's kind of just sleeping in bed. Anyway, so
that's terrible.
Yeah, but
throwing up is the absolute worst.
Yeah, it was violent too. It was, and it wasn't just throwing up. I won't get into details, but let's just say that's why I thought it was a food sickness. And yeah. So like my feet and my hands were going numb. I'm like, oh, this is what's gonna happen. You know, this is how I die. So, you know, and I was telling John this story that, you know, how you always hear those stories about like people like, valiantly and courageously fighting terminal diseases up until the end, like they're really brave and, you know, whatever. Like I would be the quickest to be like, you know what, I'm just throwing in the towel. Like I have no fight in me.
Yeah.
The eulogy would be like Nate just gave up so quickly; it was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. No fight whatsoever.
Well, it's your time, right?
He like moved up his time on purpose. It really wasn't his time. He just didn't want to deal with some lightheadedness. So news and notes part of the finally getting to the Bills portion of the podcast. News and notes, and there's only a few of them. One of the main one is Rob Gronkowski officially announced his retirement earlier this past week. I don't know how it'll affect the Patriots, probably not at all, because they always seem to find a way to coach around losing players.
He's never on the field anyway, is he?
No.
Come on.
He's always injured. It doesn't matter. But I guess my point is that I'm not going to miss him. And I know that he's a Buffalo guy, and he's kind of like that funny party drunk guy, frat guy, you know, whatever. But like, I don't know. I will never look at that guy the same after the concussion he gave to Tre'Davious White, you know, which was like completely defenseless on the ground. And Gronk just, you know, basically took a run up and just dove at the back of his head. And basically, and Tre'Davious White didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't like he was fighting him before. He just outplayed him that game. And oh yeah, and the Patriots were up 23-3 at that point. So there was absolutely no reason to do that. I'll never look at Gronk the same.
No, it absolutely bothered me. And basically what you just said is, you know, how I felt as well.
I mean, in the moment, yes, I agree. But then with context too, like I'm sure we've all lost our cool at one point or another, right? Somebody gets under your skin or irritated. It's not to make excuses, but
yeah,
everybody's done something where like, man, I wish I could have that back. I don't know if he's like expressed that or how contrite he is, but
his apology after wasn't really an apology either. It was not like after the fact he went back and like, oh, I shouldn't have done that or said, right. Oh, I'm sorry or whatever. He just kind of.
But sometimes, I guess sometimes 3 years later, you'd be like, oh, man, I was an idiot. during at that point. Like, I've learned, like, oh, things have happened in your life where you learn something from a person, a book, or an event, like something, and you're like, wow, I was stupid at that point.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to hear what he has to say now. Like, I can, at the time, I agree 100%. Like, man, what a cheap shot. Like, that's so uncalled for. So, like, you could really permanently injure somebody.
Yeah.
But I wonder what his response would be with the benefit of
time,
an extended hindsight,
yeah. Time, maturity, whatever. You know, that's kind of what I was hoping that. So I added him last year to one of the podcast gags that we have, which is basically the Piece of Garbage Club.
Garbage!
And its members include famous players that the Bills fans really hate. And there's not a ton of them, but like they just include guys like Brian Cox, you know, which everyone remembers from the 90s playing with the Jets and the Dolphins. You know, Richard Sherman for that cheap shot he had on Dan Carpenter a couple years ago. Jarvis Landry for his late hits continuously to end Aaron Williams' career. Rob Gronkowski I had added because of that. And just actually this last season we added Kiko Alonso for his continual like cheap shots and late hits on Bills players where he tried to basically end Josh Allen's season. But I was kind of hoping that Rob Gronkowski would somehow redeem himself because I don't necessarily see him as that kind of dirty player normally, but I mean that play just...
He doesn't have the history of the other guys that you mentioned.
No, but it was that severe. I mean, none of the other guys had that blatant of a play where it was completely obvious that he shouldn't have done that, where it was just wrong. He was picking on a guy two-thirds his size when the guy wasn't looking after an interception. I don't know. It was borderline assault, I would say. So, but you're right. Maybe with time, I don't know. It would take a lot for me to is there a word for unenshrined? Because right now he's enshrined into the Piece of Garbage Club. But to take that bust out of the Piece of Garbage Club would take a lot. So
I don't think I've ever heard enshrined in a negative connotation before.
Oh, yeah. Probably not.
Hmm.
So another... like gag that we haven't talked about in a little while is the Josh Allen Haters Club. This has to do with basically people in the national media, people, players that continue to hate Josh Allen, even though he's pretty much, he obviously hasn't shown all of the haters wrong in that respect, but people aren't even willing to budge on their opinions that he's a terrible quarterback and he'll have no future in the NFL. People include like Jacksonville Jaguars corner Jalen Ramsey, Bleacher Report's Jeff Schwartz, former offensive lineman who just continually rags on Bills fans and Josh Allen, Mike Tannier from Bleacher Report, Colin Cowherd, famous sports radio host, Evan Silva, Aaron Schatz, most of the Buffalo radio hosts. So if there's any other people that belong in the Piece of Garbage Club that we don't know about or I didn't mention, please let us know, either tweet us or email us, or also the Josh Allen Haters Club, because, you know, that's something that we're just going to keep track of as time goes on so we can tweet them and let them know how wrong they were as time goes on. So a perfect time, now that we're talking about the Josh Allen Haters Club, is our TeePublic store. We have a TeePublic store where we have a graphic of Josh Allen hurdling the word haters. So that includes everyone who just mentioned and everyone else out there. So it's a really cool shirt. T-shirts just went on sale for $13. Our TeePublic store is teepublic.com/stores/CTWpod. It's by far our most famous piece of artwork, but we have like 10 other pieces that you have to check out, including like our Circling the Wagons podcast logo and our Sean McDermott sprinkling the process over the Buffalo Bills logo. So check that out. Again, that site is teepublic.com/stores/CTWpod. So the Bills also added more free agents since the last time we talked. The last time we talked specifically was the Friday after free agency started. One of the more important signings has been cornerback E.J. Gaines, where the Bills signed him to a one-year, $3.6 million contract. This was kind of cool. Gaines was one of the first major acquisitions of the Brandon Bean era when he arrived in 2017 as part of a trade that sent Sammy Watkins to the Los Angeles Rams. Playing in the final year of his rookie deal, Gaines started opposite rookie Tre'Davious White in one of the league's most underrated cornerback lineups, and he started 11 games that season, and the Bills ended their 17-year playoff drought. And in 2018, the Bills instead signed Vontae Davis and let E.J. Gaines walk, which E.J. Gaines signed with the Browns, but his which he's had an injury history throughout his entire career. That's one of the reasons I'm sure the Bills didn't sign him to a long-term contract, and neither did the Browns, because he literally only played six games for the Cleveland Browns before going on IR. So this is kind of cool, only in the fact that they add more veteran presence to their secondary. Rookie Levi Wallace, undrafted rookie Levi Wallace, had a great second half of the season, starting after Vontae Davis left, and or retired halftime, I should say. And so this is just more veteran presence. It's like if you look at their starting, you know, four defensive backs between E.J. Gaines. If E.J. Gaines wins the competition, it'll be E.J. Gaines, Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer, and Micah Hyde, the same exact secondary that they had in 2017 when they ended the drought. So kind of cool. I was excited when I saw that free agency pickup. So we'll see what he can do, if he can win that starting spot and challenge Levi Wallace or not. But John had a really great stat for E.J. Gaines. So I'll let you give that one out, John.
Sure thing. So 2 years ago, the Bills were 8-3 when EJ Gaines started for the Bills. So, I mean, that's pretty good, right? I mean, they finished 9-7, so it's, you know.
Yeah, there's no doubt the guy's talented when he's on the field. So let's hope that he can bring that back along with Levi Wallace. I mean, there's depth. There's finally depth at that position, which there hasn't been in a little while. So between him and Kevin Johnson, Levi Wallace, Kevin Johnson, EJ Gaines, all vying for that number two role, plus possibly a rookie, a drafted rookie this season. So we'll see. The Bills also released Chris Ivory, which wasn't a big surprise to anyone that listens to the podcast or follows the Bills. The Bills end up saving $2.2 million in cap space. So one of the big topics that I want to bring up that I never thought I would ever bring up on our podcast was the NFL on Fox did a Twitter fan poll bracket. Now, this was just part of, you know, it's one of those lame things that, like, you know, just different sites or different people try to play on March Madness by doing their own form of a bracket, whether it's, you know, here's the Halloween candy bracket, or, you know, I don't know, dessert bracket, or I don't know why I can only think of food, but just that sort of dumb, you know, way of somehow getting their name in social media or whatever. So NFL on, by the way, can we all agree that the NFL on Fox is like second or third rate football coverage on TV?
I don't think anybody particularly does it well.
That's fair.
John is so elitist.
Why do they still use that robot like 20 years later?
Max, man, we're all the rage in 1994, I think. I don't know.
So they basically did this like 32 team. There's obviously 32 teams in the NFL. They did a 32 team fan bracket. And I just kind of followed from the sidelines. And then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of the members of Bills Mafia started tweeting our official Twitter account. By the way, if you follow us on Twitter, if you don't follow us on Twitter, you should. We're at CTW Pod. It's Circling the Wagons Pod. And all of a sudden, you know, I would retweet things like, oh, you know, vote for us. We're going against the Seahawks. We're going against the Saints. We ended up beating the Saints somehow, you know, just by like percent, like decimal percentage points. I'm like, all right, I'm into this. Like, we made the Final Four. Like, I think we're the best fan base. We were in the same bracket as the Titans. We ended up facing the Titans. And on the other side, it was the Browns versus the Bears, I believe. The Browns versus the Bears. So two other great franchises. The Bills versus the Titans. I'm like, oh, the Bills are easily going to win this one. And then all of a sudden, with 12 minutes left, the Bills were up 53% over the Titans at 47%. And then within seconds, all of a sudden, the poll flipped. It was all of a sudden the Bills were losing 46% to the Titans winning 54% with 12 minutes left. Like, whoa, wait a minute. How did that happen? Like, we were going to easily win this. And then all of a sudden we ended up losing in the last few minutes. So conspiracy happened through talking with different people in Twitter. Sal Capaccio tweeted this, that an actual Titans fan, not a player or anything with, or any like anyone of note, but a Titans fan ended up buying 20,000 Twitter votes for $660. So I'm just going to let that sink in for a second, that somebody, not anyone rich, I have no idea what this guy's financial, but I can't imagine, for the most part, for most of us, that $660 is worth spending for 20,000 votes to win a stupid Twitter fan poll on NFL on Fox. So I thought this was kind of ridiculous. So we started talking together as a podcast, and we started to kind of list a few things that you could buy with $660. Because I tweeted this guy back. I'm like, dude, I don't like spending $660 on stuff I have to spend money on, like food or gas or whatever. and I can't believe that you would do that. So, you know, enjoy. You and your 38 followers can enjoy this win, this victory that you had today. But just to give you an idea, John, you had a really good text message after we talked about this. Like, what could you buy with $660?
Well, I could go to Wegmans right now, and accounting for tax and deposits, I could get 12 cans per case of Genesee beer for $660, and that's 1,032 beers.
Wow. That would give you enough beer for, like, how many years, how many seasons of, like, Bills season tickets? That's, like...
At least the first weekend.
At least opening. Oh, man. There's so many things that you can do with 660. For example, I was looking up like Duff's menu, Duff's in Amherst. You can buy 687 and a half buffalo chicken wings from the famous Duff's in Amherst. You could buy 110 cheeseburger garbage plates for $660. You could buy 51 months of Netflix premium subscription. That's over 4 years of Netflix for what this guy paid for 20,000 Twitter votes. You could pay for 3 months of heating through like the coldest months in Buffalo. That's like equivalent to $660. It's like 13 full tanks of gas in like an average SUV. And I'm only basing that off like what I have to pay for to fill up my tank. You know, it's like 13 full tanks of gas, which lasts you like what, a week or two? It's like half a year's worth of gas. Like, that's absolutely insane. Mike, so you weren't paying attention. You're not on Twitter like we are, like John and I are, like following this stuff. Do you think that this is, so one of the things that pisses me off is that I actually cared in the end, because it's such a stupid reason to, there's no way of saying which fan base is better from one to the other based on this. Like, just, you're just better on Twitter, apparently, to getting the word out to, for fans to vote. But it doesn't mean that, like, you have better, I mean, really, the Cowboys, if they're America's team, they probably should have won it. But what do you think? Do you think this was, I guess, what are your thoughts on it from someone that doesn't follow Twitter?
Like, I had no idea about it. And it's like, if I say like, oh, it's just Fox is trying to generate buzz so people go there, right? Like, who gives a shit? There's probably 50 polls at any given time about the same thing from different sources.
I know.
Twitter's a time suck. It's just giving your brain a little drop of dopamine so you can get through your fucking work day without blowing your brains out all over your cubicle wall. Like, it's anything critical of Twitter and passionate sports fans is also critical of us as a podcast.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, that's fair.
Okay.
Because I kind of agree. So it's like, it's just like at the end of the day with the team, it's like if the Bills do terrible, you're just like, well, I don't really care about this season, so it didn't really matter. When really it still
right.
kind of hurt you and you were invested into it a great amount. Well, yeah. I don't think the Twitter poll is kind of, it's like, eh, you know, it's kind of dumb, but like, hey, I got into it. I'll admit, like, people were tweeting me and tagging us, the official, you know, our podcast account, and I was getting into it. I was like, I want to win this. I really want to win this. So we won, you know, against the Saints just narrowly. Okay, we got this. We started beating the Titans to begin with at like 60% to 40%. And I'm just like, man, the Titans must have been in some weak ass bracket to make it this far. And then like us just trouncing them, the ability to buy votes in Twitter. And the fact it wasn't, I was upset at myself for caring that much, because I got that mad. I got that angry when I found out that he bought votes. When he rigged the election, essentially. So it was just like,
there is no collusion.
We have.
What's the other one? There's no collusion, no interference or something. What does Trump always say?
I don't know. Sad. It was like, that's what I should have tweeted after this. Like, can you believe that somebody would actually collude in this election? It just goes to show you what people will do to win a dumb Twitter poll. Sad. I didn't think we were going to talk about Trump on this podcast. So I was just, I thought that was really, it was funny / irritating / you know, at the end of the day, it was just like, whatever. Let the guy win if you're going to be. I guarantee people in Buffalo aren't spending $660 for 20,000 votes. But what was really cool is afterwards, you know, Bills Mafia, like they always do, you know, put their effort together instead of, you know, spending money on a Twitter vote, you know, to make sure that the Browns ended up winning, which they went into the championship bracket. Instead of doing something like that or paying for that, they ended up donating money to the Nashville Child Advocacy Center for, you know, abused children and stuff like that. So it was really kind of a cool story. One of the Bills' new offensive tackles, I think it's Adrian Waddle from the New England Patriots. His wife ended up, you know, sparking this with Del Reed and everything like that. So it ended up becoming a good thing. They ended up raising thousands of dollars to charity to show that we are a classy fan base. And even though we lost the Twitter poll on NFL on Fox, we are still the best fans in the country.
No one. No. No one. No one. No one.
Circles the wagon. Circles the wagon.
Circles the wagons.
Circles the wagons.
Circles the wagons.
Circles the wagons.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
Like the Buffalo Bills.
So anyway, so we're doing this segment that we do in the off season, or not during the regular season, I should say, because technically it still is part of the football season. This week in Bills history with John.
This week in Bills history.
Great. This is courtesy of a tweet from Bills backers Manayunk PA at BB Manayunk. This is from April 4th. On this date in 1972, construction began on Rich Stadium. And I have a trivia question for you guys.
Oh, yes. Yes. Mike, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
obviously, the Bills had the War Memorial Stadium originally, and then in 1973, they started at Rich Stadium.
Damn it!
When did
good one, Nate.
Sweet. Okay, go ahead, John.
In what year was Rich Stadium no longer called Rich Stadium?
Oh, jeez. I think it was when it went to Ralph Wilson Stadium, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm gonna put a guess out there, and we're not doing Price is Right rules.
So yes, we are doing Price is no, Right rules.
If I do like 2018, you'll be like, yeah, the year one, you know, just to screw me.
Well,
so Mike would do it. That's not that ridiculous. Mike would do that. I'm gonna say 2007.
I will say 2006.
1998.
So, Mike. Oh, really? That long ago? Congrats, Mike.
Thank you. We should really have to submit the number to John. This is the worst possible way to do it.
Yes, it is. Well, you should have to go first next time. So, because you won, then you go first next time. So, there we go. We just decided it.
But it's going to be the exact same thing. Like, you're going to, if you approach it logically, right, you're just going to go one off and get yourself all of those values.
Maybe next time it won't be a number. It'll be a person or something.
Yeah.
Every time you've done it, it's been a number.
I think so.
No, it was training camps. There was like the training camp locations before St. John Fisher.
It was like how many locations were there?
No, it was named, and we were like, we couldn't think of it after like, before Fredonia, we're like, I don't know, Ralph Wilson's backyard.
Pro Bowl players from like 91 or something.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. Pro Bowl players from 91. There was like 10 or 9 that year.
Yeah, something like that.
Bruce Smith.
Cool. All right. Well, this is a perfect time. Now let's have a quick word from our sponsor.
Do, 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 do.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy, my nemesis because he's really good, or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. Now what we were talking about earlier in the beginning of this podcast, we're going to get to our mock draft central.
Mock. Yeah.
Ing.
Yeah.
Drafts.
Yeah.
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 This comes courtesy today from BuffaloBills.com. Chris Brown does a really great job there where he basically gathers all of the mock drafts, at least some very significant mock drafts within the industry, and he puts them on their website. So we're going to read these players aloud. This is just a great chance for all of us to get an idea of which players will be taken around the 9th pick when the Bills pick, get an idea of what these players, who they are, where they're coming from, what position they play, and some insight from some of these draft writers. So this is a great idea. You know, we've interviewed people, like I've interviewed Chris Trapasso in the past from CBS Sports. We have an interview next week where I interviewed a senior member of Pro Football Focus to talk free agency, the draft, the Bills' needs, just talk a lot about analytics and stuff like that. So some of these guys will be in that conversation. I'll let you know which ones. And yeah, so this is just a great opportunity. We're going to go through and read. If we have anything to say about each of these players, we will. But we're kind of going to give you guys, the listeners, a rundown of which players were selected from each draft site. So I'll go first. CBS Sports, Sean Wagner-McGough, with the number 9 pick, defensive tackle Ed Oliver from Houston. He has the Bills selecting. He writes, with Kyle Williams retiring, the Bills have a need on the interior of the line. It's a need Oliver fills. He's coming off a 3-year college career that saw him record 53 tackles for a loss, and he might also be the best player available, regardless at that position. Now, I forgot to mention this earlier. Ryan Talbot does this really cool thing on NewYorkUpstate.com where he lets people know if there are pre-draft visits scheduled for players. So I'll just ask you guys real quick, John, Mike and John, do you think Ed Oliver has a pre-draft visit with the Buffalo Bills?
Sure.
All right. Yes for John?
No.
No for Mike. And the answer is yes. Ed Oliver has a pre-draft visit with the Buffalo Bills. Now, they get 30 pre-draft visits from college or, you know, draft prospects. So he is one of the people. So, John, you got the next one.
All right. John's not going to be able to say this name anyway.
All right, Cynthia Freeland for NFL.com writes, for the number 9th pick, defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, Clemson. The Bills' defense gave up the 3rd fewest yards per play last season and were one of only 4 teams to allow 5 or fewer yards per play on first down. In the wake of Kyle Williams' retirement, fortifying the defensive tackle position is key. The Clemson product's ability to both stop the run and defend the pass meant he graded in the top 3 amongst interior defenders last season per PFF.
Nice. So 2 defensive tackles already.
I thought you said her name was Cynthia Fraulein.
That's what I said before the podcast, Cynthia Fraulein. It's like I just watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade or something. Mike, you're up, bud.
The Draft Wire, Luke Easterling, says the Bills trade with Washington, move down to number 15 and take offensive tackle Juwan Taylor out of Florida. He argues helping Josh Allen has to be the focus of this draft, and while free agency has added some solid pieces to the offensive line and the receiver group, they could still use a stud for each. Here they give Allen the top tackle in the draft. He can play either side and add an extra pick in the process.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, so in the interview I had with the gentleman from Pro Football Focus, I guess this is kind of a spoiler. No, wait, this is a teaser. Spoiler is when you give something away, right? This is a teaser. Okay, this is a teaser. Spoiler alert. It was a great interview. It's going to be an amazing podcast. But teaser is we do talk about some of these players. And in fact, I ask him exactly which teams have needs at quarterback that he thinks will trade up with the Bills. And he does mention Washington as one of them. So that's kind of cool. So the Washington Redskins have the number 15th pick. The Bills go from 9 to 15. He doesn't say what the Bills get in return, but definitely one of those teams that needs quarterback that could easily move up at 9 ahead of Denver at 10. So, okay. So the next one is from NFL.com. Charles Davis with the number 9 pick. He has the Bills selecting tight end Noah Fant from Iowa. The Bills could easily go with an offensive lineman here, and it would make sense even if they did spend some capital in that area in free agency. However, a young, developing quarterback like Josh Allen needs a tight end who can become his go-to guy. I think Fant is the best tight end in the draft. Very controversial, by the way. Right now I have a running Twitter poll about if you want to take a tight end in the first round. I think I'm going to actually make this into a podcast and write up an article on BuffaloRumblings.com about, you know, thoughts on taking a tight end in the first round or just early, like when the Bills are picking, because I think it's a very polarizing subject. Last time I checked the Twitter poll, it was around 49%, 51% either way. So, yeah, pretty polarizing. So, John, you're up, bud.
All right. Next one from Pro Football Focus. They have cornerback Byron Murphy out of Washington. They say Murphy fits perfectly opposite Tre'Davious White in that scheme, as Murphy is perhaps the best zone coverage corner.
All right, first cornerback we've seen taken. Mike?
Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, at number 9, defensive tackle Owen Williams from Alabama. There's no way Williams falls to the Bills, right? Either way, he is a monster, dominating just about every snap during the 2018 season. And he came to the combine and dominated there too, blazing a 4.83 40-yard dash, which only confirms what we already do. Williams's physical abilities are off the charts.
Nice. That's the third different defensive tackle we've seen already. So this next one is from SB Nation, Dan Kadar from Mocking the Draft. Defensive tackle, he has at number 9. Defensive tackle Ed Oliver, again, from Houston. There is a chance Oliver could go in the top 5 picks. He's certainly garnering some interest. Some mock drafts have him going as high as number 4 to the Raiders, with whom he has a visit scheduled. The Cardinals, who own the first overall pick, are also bringing him in. It's just because that so many teams are fascinated by Oliver. He has elite get-off at the snap and creates pressure consistently. He's not the biggest, and his pass rush repertoire needs work, but he will make an impact early in his career. So I forgot completely to continue doing this thing where I mentioned if people have pre-draft visits or not. So Christian Wilkins, I'll just go over him real quick. Christian Wilkins out of Clemson does not. Juwan Taylor out of Florida, offensive tackle out of Florida, does. Noah Fant out of Iowa does not. The tight end out of Iowa does not, at this point at least. Byron Murphy, the cornerback out of Washington, does not. And Quinnen Williams out of Alabama does not at this point.
All right. Next one is Maurice Moten from Bleacher Report. He has at number 9, the Bills taking Juwan Taylor, Florida. He writes, the Bills need a physical presence in the trenches. In November and December, when there's blustery, inclement weather at New Airfield, the offense could use a mauler on the offensive line, and Taylor fits the bill. For the most part, Taylor lined up on the right side of Florida's offensive line. He could play the same position in Buffalo. The Bills need a long-term solution there with upside. Taylor could hold the edge for running back Sean McCoy and keep top-level pass rushers off of Josh Allen. The strong-arm signal caller would have enough time to develop deep throws to John Brown and find Cole Beasley. Assuming the 2017 second-round pick Deion Dawkins remains on the blind side, the Bills could have their bookend for their front line two early-round draft picks.
Nothing has taken me back to like fourth grade, like this project. Reading out loud to the class.
Yeah, but you're doing great. You're doing it very well. Thanks. I can't tell, dude. That was a long one. John just read like 3 paragraphs.
I lost my place. Benjamin Solak, the Draft Network, says at 9, defensive end Montez Sweat, Mississippi State. And he writes, if I have one goal for this draft in Buffalo, it's to improve the pass rush. It wasn't bad in 2018, but competitors have to have a strong 4-man rush in the modern NFL, and Buffalo's starting 4 is just lacking in juice outside of the timeless Jerry Hughes. While I looked at Nifty Edge Bender Brian Burns here, I had to stay true to Sean McDermott's preference and grab the size, strength, and athleticism of Montez Sweat. He isn't a great pure rusher, but he can win with his hand in the dirt or from a stand-up alignment, and his power and length can be devastating with further development.
All right, so this is a new one. Defensive end Montez Sweat, the first defensive end that we've seen so far in the mock drafts. And just another teaser, he is brought up also on next week's podcast with a gentleman from Pro Football Focus. Do you think that he has a pre-draft visit with the Bills?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yep, you're both right this time. The next one is from Atlanta Journal-Constitution from D. Orlando Ledbetter, whoever that is. With the number 9 pick, the Bills select defensive end Rashawn Gary out of Michigan. He's 6'6" and 283 pounds. You can play end and slide down inside to tackle. Rashawn Gary is an enigma, Kuiper said. You expect more than 10 sacks in a career for a guy with that kind of talent. You expect 20-plus career sacks with that kind of talent, and you didn't get it. Will the scheme allow him to get turned loose in the NFL, or will that allow him to be productive as a pro more so than when he was in college? That's a roll of the dice. But I specifically asked the guy from Pro Football Focus about Montez Sweat and Rashawn Gary, and it's really interesting. He had him in his Boomer Bust column on Pro Football Focus, so it was really good to hear, you know, what somebody like that has to say, somebody that's done the analytics and that's talked to or that's seen players transition from college to the football level. You know, do they succeed with a limited college, you know, production resume as opposed to, you know, guys that produce well in college and trying to translate to the NFL? So Rashawn Gary, defensive end out of Michigan, pre-draft visit, yes or no? This is the last one.
No.
Yes.
Did you say no, John, or I don't know?
I said no.
It is a yes. Yes, good call, Mike. So I'm going to end the podcast with a question from a listener of ours. The question is from Devin in Williamsville. He said, which position do you guys not think that the Bills should not draft with the 9th overall pick? So I saw this question. I thought it was really interesting because it kind of reminded me of Chan Gailey and Buddy Nix's first offseason together. And we were all wondering who are they going to draft at number 10 overall? Was it going to be like a defensive tackle or like a defensive end, which were like both needs at the time? And then it ended up being CJ Spiller, you know, after they already had Fred Jackson and Marshawn Lynch on the roster. So it kind of got me thinking, like, which positions do I definitely not want the Bills to select? Because there's been a lot of talk about Brandon Bean going best player available, which is normally like the best plan of action in general, but there's still a few positions where I'm like, maybe if it's best player available, you know, maybe you still don't draft a guy at that position. But I'm going to go with the first most obvious one because of, you know, what's happened, you know, last season, the one where I know the Bills definitely won't draft one to begin with because they've already got it taken care of. It's like I said, it's pretty obvious, is long snapper. I mean, the Bills just signed long snapper Reed Ferguson to a 3-year contract, so we're good there, right, guys?
I agree.
John, what about you? Who do you see as a position where you can't see the, or you see the Bills either not drafting or they should not draft with the 9th overall pick?
I mean, I said I agree. So no, I mean, you go kick the punter, right?
Yep.
You want a real answer? I'm going to go with running back because you kind of already said it a little bit, like so many times they draft a first or second round running back over the years and it hasn't done them any good. Going all the way back to Travis Henry was a second round pick, and then you had McGahee was a first round pick, Spiller was a first round pick, Lynch was a first round pick. Like every 3 years, 2 or 3 years, they would draft another guy in the top round or whatever. They traded for McCoy. I'm not saying that any of those were particularly bad, but like in general, it hasn't worked out for him.
Maybe they just weren't picking the right people. Dude, Ezekiel Elliott.
Exactly. They're not picking the right people.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson. Well, the thing about those guys, when those picks were made, it was like, I think those teams were kind of set at most a lot of other positions. So running back is it's a luxury to draft in the first round, in my opinion. Like you have a lot of either these guys are like can't miss talents, because you can get a lot of solid running backs in the second round or later. You know, some undrafted guy like Philip Lindsay out of Denver this year had a great season, and he was undrafted. You know, I want to say he had like a top 10 season, you know. So even LeSean McCoy, LeSean McCoy was a second round pick. Like, there's a lot of really good running backs that are picked later in the draft.
Fred Jackson drafted.
Undrafted, yeah. So rare are the Ezekiel Elliotts and the Adrian Petersons of the world. So, but for every one of those, there's a Brady Lacy. Was that who I'm thinking of? Eddie Lacy. That's what I mean. Is he a second round pick? I don't know. Anyway, there's enough busts. So, Mike, what about you? What's a position that you don't want to see the Bills draft with a ninth overall pick?
I guess with the optimism surrounding Josh Allen, Nate, a quarterback would be a good safe bet that the Bills wouldn't be taken off the board with the number nine pick this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely – that seems obvious, but, you know, it's worth noting. And plus, I've read a lot of things.
I thought that's what you're asking me for. Obvious.
Obvious. Yeah, that's what I wanted.
What the hell do you want? Old Nate draft strategy, when they didn't have a franchise quarterback, and maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but we're hoping that Josh Allen isn't the answer in the franchise quarterback for a number of years. But the old Nate advocated, we'll say the old Nate strategy advocated taking a quarterback in every pick that you had until you achieved getting the answer at quarterback.
I don't think
having a huge quarterback competition with your 10 drafted quarterbacks.
That might have been one avenue. I was desperate. I just wanted.
It was groundbreaking. It was groundbreaking.
Yeah, it still hasn't been done yet.
They were going to write academic papers about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's probably a good reason why I'm not a GM of a football franchise.
They should be continuing to draft a quarterback every year, including this year.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
John is also a proponent of the Nate strategy.
One each year.
Not one with every single pick each.
They got 10 draft picks this year.
The Bills
use one of them on
the quarterback. The Bills staying put at their fourth round pick and drafting yet another quarterback. John brought up a great draft strategy, and I do agree with that. Even this year, even though the Bills technically have a solid quarterback room with Josh Allen as a starter, finally, you know, we finally have he will get all of the first team reps all off season and have a full off season under his belt, unlike last season where he was switching back and forth and he didn't really have a true off season because he was spending a lot of time with the draft process, all that stuff. I still think they should draft a quarterback this year at one point, either day two or day three. And I'm thinking more like day three, obviously, but they absolutely. I mean, you never know when you can pick up a guy. I mean, what are the odds to say that you couldn't draft a guy that would be better than Derek Anderson? And worst case scenario, he just flames out. Like, Derek Anderson is going to be off the roster in 1 year. You could get a guy that could potentially be either a trade piece or a great backup, you know, after Matt Barkley's contract ends. So I love that strategy, John, and I agree with that. Every season, you should be drafting a quarterback in some round, right? You don't care which round, just some round, right?
Agree.
Like, I will say the same thing so this is kind of a strategy that I have. So when you find your franchise quarterback, you should be drafting at least one wide receiver every single season. You know, I believe the Packers are one of those teams that always does that. Every season, they draft another wide receiver in some round or whatever. Like, they never take a year off of wide receiver, even though they have, like, so many good guys. Same with the Steelers, you know. They always draft wide receivers around Big Ben. That's why they have Juju Smith-Schuster. That's why they had Antonio Brown before. That's why they had Martavis Bryant. Like, they were just really good at drafting wide receivers. So I know the Bills are probably going to draft a wide receiver with one of their 10 picks, but from here on forward, if Josh Allen is the franchise quarterback, they need to draft one every single season. Whether they have 5 draft picks or 10 draft picks, they need one. So I'll go next. One of the positions that I definitely don't want the Bills to draft with the 9th overall pick, if thinking about it, is safety. I think the Bills have 2 legitimate franchise safeties in Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. I can't see the benefit of adding another safety to that mix, just to push for, I don't even know. I'm not a big fan of taking safety at 9 overall. I think that's way too high of a pick for that position specifically. But I think that we're set there. I would not want the Bills to take any safety, even if he's the best safety in the draft, taking him at number 9 overall. So what about you, John?
I don't know, fullback?
Are you guys all out of positions? Because I have a couple more. You guys all done?
Go ahead.
really fight me for it. So I have center as the next one, just because I think the Bills don't need a center after signing Mitch Morse. I mean, the best that they can do is if he's one of those guys that can also be play guard, then I'm okay with. But if he's a pure center and he's going to play as such, then I don't think the Bills should draft him. I think that they've already committed money to Mitch Morse, and that's just one of those positions where what good does it do? I mean, he's not going to replace a guy. He's not going to replace Mitch Morse in a year unless Mitch Morse gets severely injured. So a strict pure center, you know, I would not want the Bills to draft. So since you guys definitely don't have any more to add to that, I want to thank Devin for the email and question. Follow us on Twitter, like I mentioned earlier, at CTW Pod. That's Circling the Wagons Pod. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast, which now not only has our amazing podcast, but has Rumblings Q&A with Matt Warren, Blitz Bills, and now Breaking Buffalo Rumblings with Anthony Marino, which he just recently did a mock draft of his own, which is really cool. We really have everything covered for you guys throughout the season and off season with the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. So like I said before, stay tuned next week for our interview with Cam from Pro Football Focus, where we dive into the Bills' most pressing positional needs from an analytical standpoint, which players are being mocked to the Bills that are boom or bust in this year's draft, and a bunch of other topics that have nothing to do with any stupid Twitter poll that can apparently be bought, because Twitter polls can be bought, we found out. So I want to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening to us. So signing off. So for John.
Yay.
So for Mike.
Go Bills.
And for me, Nate, I could buy some pretty decent season tickets with $660, and I suggest you guys all do the same. Go Bills. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
You're not getting season tickets.
No, but if I had $660 to burn... No, I wouldn't. That's a huge time commitment.